Hello.
Hello, Ellie. It's Lindsay here from Study Fit Quine Hook.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us tonight. I am just on the computer at the same time, and I'm linking up our online training group so that they will be able to listen in on our conversation as we do it. It kind of makes it a little bit more scarier, doesn't it?
Yes.
So, one moment, and I will just turn this into a live video if I can remember how to do that. There we go. Okie dokie. So, welcome everyone to Working from the Inside Out. I am really excited to have with me again Lindsay Field, who is known with her page on Facebook, The Study of the Equine Hoof, and also known as Green as in Boxer. Well, actually, it's changed a couple of times since then, hasn't it, Lindsay? But
Yes,
I guess that's
Boxer,
where it all
then
began.
yeah, Boxer, then Luca, and now I've got a new horse called Evie.
Yeah, awesome. So we did this recording a couple of weeks ago, but unfortunately we had a really poor connection. So we're here, we're doing it again, and hopefully this is going to be a lot better. And I hope that everyone listening in the live feed can hear this all right as well. Let me know if you can't hear it for those that are listening in, and I'll try and jimmy things around so that you can. So anyway, that's a very brief bio on my behalf, Lindsay. But maybe you could go into telling us a little bit more about yourself, your blog, where things sort of all began, and now the story of the equine hoof.
Yeah, of course. So I got into horses about 5 years ago when my son was dating a girl that had a horse, and I took him to the Greenhithe stables to meet his girlfriend and saw all the horses up close, and I could smell them and hear the clippity clop of the hooves. And it took me back to being a 12-year-old girl again. And it was all those feelings of being in love and infatuation. And I rushed back home and I said to my husband, "Oh my gosh, I found what I want. I want a horse." And he said, "Hold on a minute. You don't even know if you can ride. You're 52 years old. You haven't been on a horse for a long, long time. Why don't you go and get some lessons?" So that's what I did. And I went to my local riding school and I learned to ride again on an old boy of 22 called Boxer.
Awesome.
And I actually took Boxer on because Boxer was going to be put to sleep with severe navicular and ringbone. And I asked if I could have him and just enjoy him for a few weeks and give him lots of love and attention. And I said I would put him to sleep and I would bury him on my property. And the owner agreed, the riding school owner agreed, and I took Boxer. And within 4 weeks, Boxer started to be much better. He was less lame. And within 8 weeks, I was riding him. And within 10 weeks, I'd bought myself a new car and a float, and we were riding the beaches together.
You definitely know how to throw yourself into these things, don't you?
Yeah, I do. When I embrace something, it's all or nothing. I eat, drink, sleep it. It's quite a strange personality, I think.
Has that been something that you've had with you for your life, or is that something that you've sort of developed over time?
Yeah, I've realized now that through my life, when I've taken something on, if you want me to do something, you need me to do it when I'm on the boil, because I'll do it and I'll do it to the nth degree. But there's no point asking me to do something if I'm not on the boil or I'm not interested, because it just doesn't get done. But yeah, I do all sorts of things. I do sewing and I do gardening and I do mosaicing and I do artwork. And so you know, I haven't picked up a brush to do artwork for probably 2 years now, and I haven't done mosaicing for probably a year at the moment. It's all my hoof work that's taking my time and my energy.
Yeah, and I think I have to interject here because I don't know if too many people know, but I was just totally blown away when you gifted me the beautiful painting of Tama from when I took him into the National Park, and it was such a special moment. So to be surprised with that, it was just it's one of my favorite moments.
You know, it's funny because when I saw that photograph of you that you put up of Tama and going back, and I saw that look in his eye, and when you'd said that you'd taken him back to his home and that you felt quite torn almost that you had taken him from the wild, but you know, you had given him an amazing life and amazing opportunities, and I could see that in the picture, and I needed to paint it desperately, needed to paint it. And I never knew if it was going to work or not. And because it didn't matter, because I never told anyone, I just beavered away at it. And when it finally came right, I think and I hope I captured the moment, the look in his eye, and everything about it. It was, I loved every brush stroke.
Wow, it's absolutely stunning, and it sits above our fireplace in the lounge, so it's center stage and it's always getting comments, so it's very cool. I think I may have just we've got a couple of people listening in. Hi, Sally, and hi, Georgia. I'm hoping that you can hear us okay, and I'm not too sure. If let me know, ladies, if you can hear both of us okay, or if it's quite quiet. I'm not actually too sure where the microphone is on my computer, and I've got a little bit of a crazy setup going. So I've got the podcast thing being recorded on my phone. So I'm holding this, and then I've got the live broadcast on the computer. I'm sure there must be some easier way of doing this, but I figure like you're better to just get started than to think too much about getting it perfect.
Yeah, getting going is important because in life, if you wait for the right moment in anything you do, it will never be the right moment. You've just got to go for it and take that risk and take that chance.
Yep, I totally agree. So Sally says, I'm very clear, but that Lindsay's not so clear. Let me know. I'm just holding the phone up closer to the microphone on the computer. So hopefully that will make it a little bit clearer. But if not, then you'll just have to wait till it's out on the podcast and have a listen in there. So where did we get to? That you've got many interests, including artwork and mosaicing and gardening, and now the study of the feet has kind of taken over.
Yeah, it really has. And that all started because when I got Boxer, he had shoes on and I wanted to take the shoes off and I wanted to rehabilitate him. I mean, that was what I really wanted to do, and I didn't think I'd have a chance, but it worked. And then I had lots of trimmers that helped me. They trimmed his feet, but he was always a little bit sore afterwards, and I just kept thinking this can't be right. And so I decided that I wanted to learn for myself. And there was a whole horse dissection that was being done by Sharon May Davis. And that was a year ago in February. And I went to that. And the thing that I desperately wanted to see inside was the hooves. But we spent 3 days looking at every muscle and every nerve and every you name it. We looked at it. And we spent about 10 minutes on the hooves. So I felt terribly shortchanged. Of course, it was a whole horse dissection, it wasn't a hoof dissection. And my darling husband, he went to the pet food factory in Hamilton and he purchased me some hooves and he put them in a chili bin full of ice. And there I was in the motel room. And he said, I've got you something. And I said, oh, what? And there was this chili bin sitting in. Said, open it up. And there were hooves in there now. Actually,
That's beautiful.
I was over the moon. I was totally and utterly, you couldn't have given me a better present. And when
Yeah,
we,
no dress or shoes or flowers.
no. And when we got home, we popped them in the freezer, and then he set me up down in his workshop with a bandsaw. He got the old an old bandsaw going, which meant that I could cut them into really thin slices. And that's really how I got going.
Wow. And so in those early days, did you know what you were looking at or looking for, or did you have a plan of how you went about that?
Well, the very first hoof that I looked at, my plan was, how much can I rasp it until I get to blood? That's what I wanted to know. And so that's what I did. I got the hoof and I rasped and I nipped and I rasped and I rasped, and I was quite surprised how far I could get. About a centimetre I took off before I started to hit red. And
Wow.
it was really to give me an idea of how much I could actually get away with rasping. It was that was really what my question was. And then once I started slicing the hooves up, and I just saw all this stuff inside, and honestly, I wasn't really sure on earth what I was looking at. I looked at all the textbooks, and the textbooks and things on Google were just not intricate enough for me. They weren't giving me enough information. And so that's when I realized I needed to learn more. And I invested in some very expensive textbooks. I've got the a beautiful book by Christopher Pollitt, The Anatomy of the Equine Hoof. And that was, gosh, that cost me $300. And then I bought another textbook of anatomy and X-ray and MRI correlations, and that was $200. But once I got those, I then realized it then gave me my roadmap of what I was really looking at.
Yeah.
And then I started videoing what I was doing, and it was very rudimentary. I didn't wear gloves, and I was doing it in my laundry on a tray, and the doorbell would be ringing and the dog would be barking, and it was pretty rubbish, but it was a good start. And I started putting my videos on a Facebook page, and I just had about, gosh, I got up to about 250, I think, people that were watching. And then I started doing dissection clinics where I brought people in and I showed them what I was doing, and I cut hooves up and I showed them everything. And I was videoing one of those hooves, and it was a cracked, a hoof that had a crack, and it didn't look anything really. It was just a non-event. But when I opened it up, there was seedy toe that went right up inside the foot by about 3 centimeters. It was all eaten away inside, and you would never have seen it on the outside. That was the video that was my blockbuster. That was the one that started me on my journey. It went viral. And
That is incredible.
today I've got, I think, 24,062 followers.
Wow. Well, I guess, yeah, just thinking about the crack thing, like, it's quite a common thing that we see in hooves. And now, since I have known about this video, and every time I see a crack, I kind of panic a little bit at the unknown behind it. And I have to admit, I was probably a little bit poor on managing those sort of things well. My sister will tell you that. And she commented the other day after we had spoken and said to me, "Oh, you're taking much better care of yours now." So thank you for that kick up
Well,
the
it's funny you should say that, because honestly, if anything that I've achieved, there's a huge number of horses out there where their owners have taken a bit better look at their feet, not just relied on the farrier or the trimmer. They've actually got out there, they've scrubbed the feet up, they've got on their hands and knees, and they've studied the foot, and they've gone, oh, I didn't realize that was there. And then they've picked out a hole that was in the wall, and it goes in for ages. And then they realize we've got a problem here. And it's making people look a bit more carefully, and also just educating people. You see, like, Thrush is another major problem that we have, definitely in New Zealand, that people have no idea how debilitating it is to a horse. It can make a horse so lame, they're three-legged lame, and yet all it is thrush that's eaten away in areas that you wouldn't even think about. You think you've cleaned it out, but it's still eaten away right up in the frog, maybe in the middle, the central sulcus at the back between the bulbs, or it could be in the clitoral grooves, those two diagonal lines that are either side of the frog. It can eat its way right up in there, and you think you've done a great job picking it out, but it's eaten away.
And so, what would be warning signs, I guess, say without even looking at the horse's feet, what would be something that would make you think, oh, let's look at the feet and that it could potentially be thrush?
Well, I'm not really that experienced in looking at horses' movements. I mean, a lot of people can look at movements and go, oh, they're off, or they're tight, or they're this, or they're that. I don't see that. But you show me a foot, you show me the bottom of a foot, and I can spot thrush at 20 meters now. And it's what I'm looking at is the little cracks that are in the frog in the middle. Are the telltale signs. And if I see a crack in a frog, I would say you must treat it. Don't ignore it, because frogs shouldn't be cracked. They should be smooth, and they should be like a big cushion. That's their job. They shouldn't have any splits or cracks in them. And the problem we've got at this time of year, it's awful for us. You know, we've got a major problem on our hands with the wetness, and our frogs are just shedding like crazy. But you need to, what I do now is I've made up this, I get clay. My husband was digging a huge great hole one day, and there was all this blue clay at the bottom, and I jumped in the hole and I said, I need that. What do you need that for? I'm going to make a thrush treatment, okay? And so I scooped it all out, and what I do is I mold it with copper sulfate crystals, and then I add some tea tree oil. And then I mold it all up, and I push that into the collateral grooves of the frog. You know, when you get that big deep, you know, it gets very deep in there, doesn't it? I clean it out, I scrub it out, and then I push this mud right in there, and that's been really good. So as a preventative, yeah, that's something I've been playing around with.
And what made you think of using the clay?
I felt like I needed something to be poked in there to stop the rubbish getting in. Because you see, what happens is we pick our horse's feet out, we might spray it with something, and then they go straight back in the paddock. And then it means that all that lovely spray that's gone in deep, within about half an hour, it's all washed away by the paddock, or the muck's got back in there. Now, Pete Ramey would say, it's better to do that. And also Dr. Deborah Taylor, she's an equine vet that's really into thrush and feet. She would say, if you've got to do it, you've got to keep doing it. Even though they get turned out into the paddock and they get full of mud, you still need to do it. And she's done studies that have proven that it actually makes a difference. But getting back to the clay, I felt that I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't keeping my treatment in there, and that's I was trying with cotton wool, and that just kept falling out and getting soggy. And the clay seems to really work, and it can be in there for a couple of days, and I go to pick the feet out, and there's all the clay still sitting there. So it's definitely staying there, and I'm quite excited about it. And I've given away my formula.
It's you better put it into a potto and sell it quick now, Lindsay.
Yeah, oh, it's got to be the right type of clay. Only from my garden. No other clay will work.
Exactly. But that makes sense, doesn't it? I was listening to a really cool podcast today with Patrick King, and I can't remember the lady's last name. I'll bring it up and I'll link it into this so that people can find it. But basically, she's holistic health, so she uses like your traditional, you know, medicines that you get from a vet, as well as all of like the herbal the essences and the oils, and so she just uses everything. But she was talking about, and I don't know enough about this really to be talking about it, but it just kind of like interested me, so I want to delve deeper into it. But she was talking about the microbiome. Do you know much about that? Yeah.
I think I'm starting to learn about it.
So that kind of seems like it comes back to that sort of area of taking, I guess, what's natural as well and already in the earth.
I mean, I like to, for me, I lead as natural a lifestyle as I can. I try and eat clean and healthy foods, and I really want the same for my horses as well. And some of this natural stuff can be cheap as, you don't have to spend a lot of money. A bottle of tea tree oil and some copper sulfate, great,
Yeah, it's fantastic. I just want to say, we've got a few people listening in, so feel free to comment if you've got any questions or if there's anything you want to add in as well, like anything that you want to ask Lindsay. I'm sure she won't mind us firing them at
Fine.
her. So, where are we up to? I've got a sheet of little questions that I came up with as well. So you started to do the you started to I guess investigate the feet as well. And then how did that change your care with Boxer?
Well, once I started learning about feet, I mean, when I first started looking at feet, they just looked like a blob, like a piece of wood. I couldn't see anything. It didn't mean anything to me until I started following a few barefoot trimming groups on Facebook. And there was a particular lady called Rhiannon Hawke, who's based in America. And near, I'm trying to think, near LA area, a little bit higher up. And she's got a really good eye, and I'd send her photographs of Boxer's feet, and she'd talk about distortions, and I'm thinking, what on earth does she mean, distortions? Well, I sort of get it now, and what I've learned now is I can look at a hoof and I can see where in the capsule where it's got too long and it's pushing all the tubules up into the coronary band and jamming them up. And once you start to train your eye, you can see it, and you can never not see it. And the trouble is now is I look at these beautiful, or so-called beautiful, feet in all of these magazines and these horsey magazines, and I look at them and I go, oh my goodness, that's a terrible foot. And yet it's a foot that they're showing is supposed to be amazing, because I'm starting to read the lines, the tubules that run from the coronary band to the floor. I'm starting to read the growth rings, like the growth rings on a tree. You can read so much from that, and that will tell you where it's too long, or what needs to be done, really. And also the sole, and I look at a sole and I see thrush and I see little fissures, or I see heels that are far too short, or heels that are far too long. It really shouts at me. But the one thing I have learned is there's no, it's called a cookie cutter approach. You cannot barefoot trim every horse using a same trim method. And I use that word in inverted commas, because there's lots of different trim methods, but they all are very, very similar. And that's the problem. You can't really do that, because you see, this was the thing with poor old Boxer. The trimmers were taking his heels right down to the ground. He was lame when they did that, and I'd have 2 weeks where he couldn't be ridden, and then he'd come right for 2 weeks where I would ride him. Then the trimmer would come back and whack him down again, and it was just a vicious circle. And so I learned that really you need to keep the heels a little bit bigger. You need to have a heel buttress. That's very important. And also I learned that you don't carve the sole out. You leave the sole. The sole is important. You don't try and carve a dome into the sole, which is what a lot of trimmers do. So the cookie cutter approach was something very important to me, a real take home message. And you've got to do what your horse needs. If he needs longer heels, then you leave the heels alone.
How do you tell if
Yeah.
your horse is to have longer heels and then the next horse may need to have
Shorter.
shorter
I know
heels?
it's really difficult. Now, the reason why the shorter heels came in is because it was based on the wild horse model. When they looked at it was all way back when James Jackson, he was a farrier. He used to put shoes on horses, and he went out and looked at the wild horses in America, and he studied them, and he studied them with the group called the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management. These were the guys actually supposedly look after these wild horses. They cull them when there's too many or rehome them, that sort of thing, because they need to keep a bit like the Kamanawas, they need to make sure that they are not too many for the habitation. And so he went out and he studied these feet, and the take home messages that he got were these feet were amazing. They were strong, they were incredible, they showed no pathology. And the one key message he took home was that they had very short heels. And so the message then came back to everybody is that we need to bring the heels down. But the problem we had with our domestics is that it's not just a case of bringing the heels down. What our domestic horses needed was all of the internal structures need to be strong as well. And we were talking about there's a cushion inside the foot called the digital cushion, and that is really compromised in our domestic equines because they don't get enough exercise, movement, and without shoes. So the digital cushions and the cartilages at the side are all really crappy in our modern horses. So what did we do? We whacked the heels right down, get those frogs on the ground, and it actually was a bit of a problem. Our equines couldn't cope with it. And so now what we're realizing is we can't do that. We do need to keep a shortish heel, but we need to take it back slowly and allow all those internal structures to grow and be strong. It's a bit like us when we've been all winter and we've been wearing our boots, and then we go out onto the beach and it hurts. When we put our jandals on, it's very similar to that. It's not just building up skin, it's building up all the insides of our feet as well.
I just thinking about that, I remember this was probably about 10 years ago now, that there was this little boy, and he never used to wear shoes, not because he didn't have any, because he just didn't want to. And one day he came home from school and had cross country, and he very proudly told me that he'd beaten everyone and had no shoes on.
That's amazing. And that is a really good analogy for me. And I think the problem we have for our equines is the way we're keeping them. They're not wild horses. They're not traveling 30, 40, 50 kilometers a day on all terrains. We can't possibly do that for our equines unless we have a track system and keep them moving and put them on gravel. It's just so hard for us. So we just have to do the very best we can for them.
And so what is that happy medium that seems to work? I know it's different for every horse, but when we don't have the ability to have them moving a lot, how can we help them the best we can through trimming?
Well, yes. I mean, ideally, so what when you trim a horse's foot, what you're doing is you're taking away what nature can't take away. Because ideally, if they were out in a natural environment, then nature would deal with that. Because if these horses were lame when they're out on the prairie, they will get killed by the mountain lions. So they have to have their feet have to be magnificently functional. So what do we need to do? Well, we should only be taking away what nature can't take away. We need to keep them moving. Well, what does that mean, keep them moving? Now, the gold standard that I'm reading now is these things called paddock paradise or where you put them on a, you don't keep them on lush green grass. You set up a an electric fence around the whole perimeter of your property, and you keep them moving, and keep them in a herd so they keep moving, and give them lots and lots of hay, but at different hay stations, so they don't camp out in one place. They keep moving around and around and around. Now that's supposed to be the gold standard, but how many of us can do that? You know, I've said this to a lot of people. It's all very well saying this is what we need to do. Well, actually, to do that costs tens of thousands of dollars, and then you need to go and catch your horse because you need to go and do something, and he's way back over the other side of the paddock. You know, and
Miles
it's
away.
really hard. It's really hard. So look, what do I do? What do I do personally? Well, I try and keep my horses on quite a lot of hay. So I try and keep them not on too much grass. I watch the grass intake because of laminitis. And I try and keep them moving, and they have this huge grey area which is full of volcanic sand and grit to try and keep their feet healthy and to get them out of the mud. That's the other thing. And look, it's not perfect, but it seems to be working for me. I mean, I my new horse, Evie, she's just come out of shoes, and I'm transitioning her with my trim friend, Sarah Parker, to barefoot. We've probably got 18 months of work ahead of us, but I'm hoping that she'll have good, strong feet at the end of it. And look, I'll put boots on her. I'll buy hoof boots for her to when I ride her on other terrains. That's the plan.
Yep, to help her with that transition, or will that be, will your ultimate goal be to be able to ride without them?
The ultimate goal, the gold standard, will be to be able to ride on every terrain without boots. But I think for us in New Zealand, I think that's a huge ask, and I don't think we can do it, because if you think about what the hooves need to be, is they need to be in the terrain that you're going to be working them on. So if you're going to be going on stony, rocky, trail riding, they need to be living in that environment. You can't take them out of a nice lush paddock that's soft and then take them onto stones and expect those hooves to function. They can't. So you have to use boots. And some horses will be in boots their whole life. Now, if you're in America, then that's different, because a very dry, arid environment, stony and hard. And so these horses live on the environment that they're going to trail ride on.
Yeah, so it's quite different, isn't it?
Totally different, yes.
Yeah, so you really just have to adjust to, and I guess like when you spell it out like that, it really is common sense, isn't it?
Well, you know, the thing is, it's like I was thinking about my horse today, and I was thinking, gosh, those feet are not really coming on as quickly as I hoped. Well, of course they're not, because actually I'm not personally putting in enough legwork with her. I need to be taking her out and walking her on all of these terrains, you know, the gravel and the grit and hard. I need to be doing my legwork because she's not going to be doing it. You know, it's like if you wanted to run a marathon, there's no way you could do it. You couldn't just get up and do it. You've got to train, and you've got to build up your feet, your muscles, your legs, everything. And it's just the same with the horses. Their feet need to be conditioned to what you want them to do, and they won't be doing it themselves, munching away in their green grass paddocks.
Yeah, they're quite happy there. They
Yes.
don't mind.
Yes. So look, you know,
On
I would always say to someone, don't let that put you off. Just buy yourself some decent hoof boots and go for it.
Yeah, awesome. That's fantastic. What I'm going to do now is just bring up, I'm going to try and find those questions that we got. We haven't had any questions come through from this group. But what I thought I'll do is I'll try and bring up those questions that we had last time. I think I sent them through to you, didn't I?
Yeah, I can remember them from last time. Somebody asked about navicular syndrome. Why is it on? Why does it seem to be on the increase nowadays compared to the olden days? That was a question that came up.
Yeah, do you want to go into that one?
Yeah, I've actually done quite a bit of reading and researching about navicular syndrome. And, you know, to have your horse diagnosed with pre-navicular or possible navicular or just the word, you know, everyone thinks it's a death sentence. And I truly don't think that it really is now. I think it really can be managed, but I'm now realizing, and I really feel strongly, that it's a disease that man has created for our equines. And I think that it's because of shoes, and also even if they're barefoot, I think it's because we're not promoting a heel first landing, because the back of the foot is the most important part that needs to hit the ground first, because that's where all those energy dissipating structures are, all in the back of the foot. And if anyone's looked at my dissections, they'll see there's a lovely scrumptious cushion in there that absorbs energy. There's these lateral cartilages that flex and they absorb energy. They've got the beautiful frog, again, like a big rubber structure, also has to do its job to absorb energy. So if our equines are a little bit sore in the back of the foot, then they do what's called a toe first landing. And honestly, you'd be really hard pushed to see it. What you need to do is get your phone, get your mate to walk your horse up and down. You need to video it in slow motion and you need to study it, and then you can see what's going on. Now, if they slightly land toe first, then that's where all the blood vessels are, and the beautiful, very, very, the edge of the coffin bone is very fine there. It's not designed to have that impact toe first. And that's when we get masses of problems. And then it sort of like shunts back and it causes problems with the navicular bone and the deep digital flexor tendon. So I sort of feel that we're really on the cusp of navicular, and what are we going to do about it? And I sort of feel also that in the next 10 years, we're going to see some quite incredible success stories with it. And I think that the answer...
Yeah, well, I guess...
Go on.
Oh, no, you carry on.
I think the answer is going to be Rockley Farms. I don't know if you've heard of them. They actually look at navicular in a completely different way to what we would. A farrier would put a shoe on and do all sorts of weird stuff that I don't quite understand for navicular. And it doesn't really help the problem. It doesn't solve the problem. Whereas Rockley Farm, they whip the shoes off and they get these horses walking on all these different terrains, and they're starting to rebuild the bone and starting to, the navicular bone, and starting to cure the lesions on the tendon. And we talk about navicular syndrome. It's not just the navicular bone. It's not just the tendon that glides underneath it. It's a whole range of different things that can go wrong in that area. There's 20 different places that can have a problem, and we call it navicular syndrome. And really, it means heel pain.
Yes. Gee, it makes so much sense. I've been learning a bit about like the body work and stretching and that side of things, and like we see lots of horses that are toe landing as well, and I guess it's combining the two, isn't it? Yeah. Making sure they haven't got thrush or things going on.
Yes.
What that is, making them land toe first, but also making sure that we're doing body work as well, and stretching and enabling them through their muscles to be able to land heel first as well.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's not just the feet. I'm doing an equine science degree with the Equine Science Academy, and this is where I've learned a huge amount of information from them. I'm in my second term now, and what they say, I mean, the whole idea of this degree is really for trimmers to learn how to trim and to just you know, understand feet in a better way. But we don't just look at feet, we look at the whole body. We look at the skeletal system, the muscles, the gastrointestinal system. I'm going to be looking at teeth, I'm going to be looking at reproduction, honestly, because they say
amazing.
You can't just look at the feet on their own and make decisions. You've got to look at the whole horse, and that's and when you look at the whole horse, then you can then look at the feet, and you've got to bring it all together like a big puzzle.
Yeah, you start to get answers, and it's interesting for me as a trainer, and I guess that's kind of why it's inspired me to have this podcast that we're putting out called Working from the Inside Out, because the more I started to learn, the more I realized that my part as a trainer, because often I'm working with behavior problems, that's the very last piece in the puzzle to come together. And often once you've got all of the other bits and pieces sorted out, the quote unquote bad behavior disappears, because they don't want to act in a way that you know, rearing, bucking, biting, bolting, freezing, they don't want to be in that state, because that's the you know, when they're stressed out, if they're calm and relaxed, then you're not going to see any of those things. And I think so often it's brought on by pain.
Absolutely. You know, I think you've really nailed it there. I think pain is something we just don't realize. You know, horses will still function with tremendous pain going on in their bodies. And the only way they can sometimes let you know, or you know, it just comes out with this behavior. And I'm starting to see it more now. I never realized. I really didn't, but you know, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, and I think it's just a lack of knowing on everyone's behalves. And if you don't know, you don't know. And it wasn't that long ago that, you know, if the horse was bucking, then we'd kind of like push them on through it, make the wrong thing hard and the right thing easy, and instead of asking, why is the horse bucking?
Exactly.
We've got a question here from Wendy Weber, and she says, I think she had posted this when we were talking about how to set them up the best we can. So she said, what is the best surface for toughening up as a part of your track system? Sand, concrete, pebbles, gravel, etc., or is a mixture better?
Well, the gold standard per Pete Ramey and the Paddock Paradise people is pea gravel. It needs to be big enough that it doesn't get rammed up into the white line. So you don't want it, and you want it to be pea gravel, so it's like river stone, so it's smooth, because you don't want sharp stuff. And it needs to be thick enough that they can actually, it's hard to describe, but almost like you can sink into it a little bit, not too deep, because that makes it it makes it too hard. So probably about five centimeters deep. And what they say is that's the very best, the gold standard, because what that does is the feet sink into it a little bit, and then that pig, that gravel stimulates the sole and the frog. And but it's not, it's like moving, you know, it's not like a hard surface. The whole thing moves, and it allows the foot to move with it. And so they would say, at a very minimum, if you can have like a pea gravel around watering holes, around where you hang your hay up. And, you know, a lot of horses, if you can provide them with a little area of pea gravel, they actually go and stand in it. It's quite bizarre. I often go out and look at my horses, and I see them standing on the gravel, because they know that it's right for them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Quite often we leave our round pen open when we're not using it, and often the horses will go in there and stand around and walk around and That's fantastic.
Weird, eh? They do know what they need if we can provide it for them. But you see, it's expensive. And also, you don't want to put just your pea gravel down straight onto dirt, because what happens is it just disappears. It goes deeper and deeper. So I think the key would be is you actually put like a piece of tarpaulin down, and you put holes in it to let it drain, and then you put your pea gravel on top of that. You need to dig a bit of a hole, and just to stop it from disappearing, and that should last you quite a few years. Or you could put down some lime rock, pummel that down, and then put your pea gravel on top of that.
That's fantastic. Cool. What great tips. And fairly easy to implement as well.
Well, this is it, you see. It's expensive, but what you can do is you just go and buy a meter every now and again, get your trailer or get it delivered, and just do a meter every now and again and keep topping it up. And then you can just slowly eke it, slowly build it up. I mean, if you can afford it, get a six wheeler, but I mean, it is expensive. Oh, gosh, I wouldn't even like to think what it is now per meter. I think it's about $70 a meter, a cubic meter. And
Right.
it sort of doesn't go very far.
But I guess at the end of the day, you're better to spend money at this end preventing, than you are trying to do it at the other end where you're trying to save and undo like by that stage you've got, if things are going wrong, then it might start in the feet, but then it goes into body work and saddle fit and everywhere else
This is
that
it.
it affects and a horse trainer.
Yeah, you're right. You see, because if the feet hurt, if we just focus on, okay, is that foot hurting? Well, then what happens is their whole body will compensate because they've got a bit of a soreness in part of their foot. And then you end up with all sorts of problems in the rest of the body. And then you can end up with muscular problems. And then it just goes on and on and on. And all it was the fact that they were compensating for a bit of pain in their feet that could have been sorted out by having the right terrain and building the right structures within the foot and having the right trim as well.
I don't know if I told you last time we talked about a pony that came to us for training, and I'll tell it again anyway so that people can hear it, because it was quite a big eye-opener for me. And so it started off, I went along to give just a couple of lessons because the pony didn't want to be caught. It would run away, and then when she'd catch it, it would body slam her into the wall because it didn't want to be tacked up. I think she would nip. And when they bought the pony, they were warned because apparently she had double barreled the instructor. So she was just not a happy pony. So I started off sort of doing the groundwork and building a bit of a common language, and then I moved into the acceptance of stimulus. And so usually I find that once I've got some of those basic foundations there, then the problems start to go away. But after two sessions, she was not any better at all. And I found that, especially when I put the flag near her shoulder, we would get very violent reactions of extreme flight, and extreme fight as well. So she would kick or drop her shoulders in, and then freeze as well. So I said to the people, well, I think there's a little bit more going on. So she ended up coming up to my place, and we needed to get our trimmer out. And she had a look at her feet, and she was very sore in her shoulders as well. So she was really sore in her feet, and it turned out that her bars were really, really long, and she had abscesses underneath there. So she wasn't wanting to, land on her heel. She was toe landing, which then was creating all of the tight muscles up into her shoulders and her neck and her back. And So luckily we have a really awesome body worker as well. So we got her on board as well. And it was neat to see when she went home, she still needed a lot more rehab, but I think at least we had sort of started to peel away the layers of the onion, so to
Yes.
speak, and find the root cause of why she was displaying these unwanted behaviors.
Yes. Yeah. How amazing is that?
So that was a big learning curve. Oh no, hopefully we haven't just lost
No, I'm
Lindsay.
still here.
No, that's good. I was like, oh
No,
no, has it happened again?
still here.
Whew, I had a slight panic attack just then. That's cool. So, do you want to take us through into the next question that we had from last time, Lindsay? Do you have any more off the
Yeah,
top of your head, if I
no.
can scroll up anything?
I think I've already spoken about thrush because I think that was one of the questions that came up before about, what to do about thrush. So I think I've done thrush to death a bit, really.
Is there something I haven't asked you that you would like to speak about?
I think some of the things that I have been doing that's been really cool in my journey of this hoof study is that I wanted to be able to create some educational samples that people could actually look at the inside of a hoof for themselves that would be theirs to keep. And so what I've been doing is I've been experimenting with slicing the hoof into very thin slices, and then I've been preserving it in formalin, and then I've been working with different alcohols to try and preserve the tissues, and then I've been embedding them in resin, and that's been really, really cool. And I'm almost there now. I've spent thousands of dollars on my processes and getting the right resins and the right solutions to keep the foot looking like it is in real life. So I also hand paint them as well, because the trouble is when you get an old crusty hoof, a slice, it just all looks like a load of brown. So what I do is I repaint all of the tissues. They're all the same tissues, but I repaint all of the blood supply and the digital cushion and all of the cartilages and the tendons. And then I embed in resin, and that has been so cool. And I'm almost ready now. I'm almost there to start putting these out on the market. But they are going to be, it's brilliant because it means people can look at the hoof. And what I'm going to do is each hoof resin will come with its own picture to describe all the structures, so it'll be labeled up. And I'm also going to provide a video, so like my dissection videos where I talk about this and I talk about that and I talk about this is what's happening and that's what's happening. I'll do exactly the same with the resin in front of me, and I'll talk about what I'm seeing, so that will accompany the actual resin structure. So that's something
That is
I'm so
amazing.
excited about it. And I've got farriers that
Yeah.
have put in orders already. They don't even know how much they're going to be. Even I don't know how much they're going to be. But farriers have already said, I want to order these. And so what I'm planning to do is I'm planning to do a whole series on normal hooves, and then I'm starting to collect hooves that show some really good pathologies, like seedy toe. And if you've looked at my videos where I've sliced and you've seen how deep the seedy toe goes right up through the hoof wall, I've managed to keep a few slices back, and I've got those ready to go into resin. And some other ones
How
where
neat.
the sole is so thin, it's paper thin. That's a really great example of of a poor quality hoof. And also thrush. I've got some where you can see where the thrush has eaten right into about a millimeter of all of the sensitive tissues inside the foot, all the nerves and the blood vessels, a millimeter. And there's thrush sitting there. I've got all those to go into resin, so I'm so excited.
That will be really neat because I think perhaps with the hoof, it's one of those things that's almost out of sight, out of mind. So when you can show somebody exactly like this is what is going on inside, then I think it becomes a whole lot more real, doesn't
It
it?
does. It truly, and honestly, I go back to when I first looked at hooves and I thought they were like these four blocks of wood on the end of the foot, on the end of the leg. Didn't even occur to me what the hell was going on in there until I started looking. And the more I looked, the more I realized, and the more I realized, the more I needed to learn. And honestly, I'm going to be learning to the day I die. There's so much going on in those feet that even now, even the biggest people, the professors in the world, even now they still don't know what's going on, and they can't work. They don't know, they don't understand. And there's all these ideas coming out. I mean, it doesn't matter to us as being equine, loving our equines. It doesn't matter how the hoof functions in terms of being a pump for blood. We don't care about that. All we want is a hoof that's functioning. So I try and focus more on how can we keep our feet really, really healthy? What can we do as owners to keep the feet healthy? We don't need to know about all this higher powered stuff that's going on, but what can we do when we're out there with our hoof pick? How can I show people what to look at, which is absolutely important, and how what they're seeing on the outside, how it can affect the inside. And once it affects the inside, then it affects the whole horse.
That's right. Yeah. Very interesting. So just flicking over, I've just brought up a couple of the questions that we had. Although I think we've kind of, this one was on your observations on the effects on internal structures of the fad of building so much heel,
Oh,
especially on dressage and jumping horses.
yes, I remember that question. I have seen that so much, these big, long, tall heels in these shoes. And I do see it such a lot. And I actually don't know why that is, why they're so tall. And the problem you've got when you've got a really tall heel is that the frog is not having any contact on the ground unless there's plenty of dirt that's getting wedged in there, and then you're going to get some sort of feedback. But you see, the frog needs to have a bit of feedback from the ground, and so I just, for me, gosh, I'd love to dissect one of those feet. I really would, to see how different it is, because when I see feet looking like that, I see an absolutely very, very abnormal foot, terribly abnormal. And that must be an incredibly sore foot.
Yes, and because the frog isn't making contact to the ground, then the circulation isn't going to
You're
be as
absolutely
good, is it?
right. You're spot on. The frog needs to have some contact. It needs to have pressure and release, just like you do your pressure and release with your training. The frog is the same. You can't have continued pressure, pressure, pressure. It needs to give and take, and it is like a pump. And the pressure and the release is the thing that makes the frog strong and functional and healthy. And without it, I would ask your viewers to go and look at their horse's feet and see those frogs need to take up a huge amount of the foot. Probably, I would say at least, gosh, I can't even give you a figure. Say a third of the foot. The frog needs to take up a massive amount of the foot. It's a really important structure. And I would ask your listeners to go and look at their frogs. And if they see these skinny little frogs where the bulbs are all squished up together, that's not a healthy foot. And if you look in the literature and you look at all these magazines, that's what you'll see. We're not looking, we don't see healthy feet anymore. We're looking at really bad, pathologically incorrect feet, and we think that's normal. Even in the vet books, even in the textbooks, it's these feet are all deformed and they are just not correct.
Why is that they're showing those hooves as in the textbooks?
Well, I think what it is it all goes back to, why did we start shoeing horses? Well, we did because what happened was this is what I've learned, and whether it's right or wrong, you know, I could be completely off beam, but this is the take home message I get from it, that we needed horses in the olden days, you know, in the 15, 16, 1700s. They were what we used. They were our workhorses, weren't they? And the problem was, is that we took them, and the husbandry of horses was shocking. They lived in stables full of manure and rubbish. And so they had to put something on their feet to protect their feet from all of that. And because their feet were so crap, because they were in the manure, that's why they needed them. You know, you couldn't have expected those horses to have been barefoot doing that work on the cobbled streets of London, say. So that's where all the shoes came in. But the problem is that the shoes then created the distortions, because the foot, the whole capsule of the foot, is designed to move. It's not designed to be rigid. And so what happens when you put a shoe on, they put the nails around the front of the foot, which is the more rigid part, and they leave nails away from the back to allow the back to spread. But the problem we've got is we're still fixing that foot in a position, and we're not allowing it to move how it needs to move. And by doing that, everything starts shrinking up. The bulbs start to get closer together. The frog starts to become just almost disappear. And it's just, that's what we saw, and we saw it for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and we thought that was normal, but that is totally not normal. And it took Jane Jackson, it took Pete Ramey, it took Jean Ovniek. He was a farrier. He went out and did, you know, he shoes horses, but he went out and looked at the wild horses as well. And this is where we keep coming back to the wild horse model, because that's supposed to be the gold standard. A nice, thick, fleshy frog, nice wide heels, a really good functional hoof. But unfortunately, it then comes back to, well, we're only going to do that if we keep them in the right conditions. And can we do that? Well, it's hard.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so Becky also says, she talked about the compressed bulbs, which you have just talked about, and long toes. And she said, I'm wondering if we have been seeing damage in the coffin bones.
Oh my gosh, I've seen so many coffin bones which look like a frilly petticoat all around the edge. Because what happens is because the bulbs are just shot to pieces, the frog's crap, and so it's sore, it's not doing its job properly, and then they land toe first. If they land toe first, there's a massive blood supply all around the front of that coffin bone, and that coffin bone is almost like razor sharp. You know, you almost could cut your finger on the edge of it. Now, can you imagine the whole weight of that horse? What are they, 500, 600, 700 kgs on those feet, on that tiny little front bit where that coffin bone is, and all those blood vessels that go around the front, and it just damages those blood vessels. Once they're damaged, they are the lifeline for the tissues in the foot. It's without those blood vessels, if they're compromised, they're not going to feed the cells. And what happens the coffin bone just starts to demineralize, and it looks like a frilly petticoat. And So, this is the problem, and I'm seeing it all the time, again and again and again.
Yeah, wow. There definitely is a need for you out there, Lindsay, to help educate people to get to move
Well,
away
look,
from
I don't
this.
want it, it's difficult for me because I have to be really on the fence with this. Look, I for me, barefoot is the only way. But I do truly understand the difficulties that people have. They've got eventing horses, they need their horses to be doing jobs, barrel racing, eventing, you name it. If they don't, if their horses don't have shoes, their horses can't do those jobs. They and I feel sorry for people because they actually don't have a choice. Well, they do if they want to take their horse out of shoes and have a 2-year rehabilitation maybe, and then keep them in boots. It's just in the too hard basket for people, and I really understand that. But you see, the key is if you're going to have a shod your horse in shoes, then the gold standard will be you need to reset those shoes regularly. Don't wait 8, 12 weeks. You are really buggering up those feet, seriously. If you can go 6 weeks and it's expensive, you are doing your horse a favor because they need to have those walls trimmed. They need to have the hoof balanced. And if they can have a proper trim and a proper balance, then you're going a pretty good way of doing the very best you can. Yeah, the hoof is not going to flex and it's not going to be able to move like it would do if it was bare, but you're doing the best you can under the circumstances. And look, a lot of horses are shod and they're shod all their life and they don't have any problems. And so I really appreciate that. But what we're trying to do, or what I'm trying to do, is show an alternative. Let's look at the alternatives for the sake of our equines. And you see, a lot of our sport horses, they won't go beyond 15 years because of the shoes and because of the nature of the jobs that we ask them to do. And that's unfortunately, which is what we want them to do. We buy horses because we want to do competition. Well, they might only have a very, very limited competition life.
And it's interesting, isn't it? You see some horses that will just put up with it, even if they are in pain, and others who
No.
won't tolerate any at all,
Yes,
and they'll let you
yes.
know about it. It was quite interesting because we grew up, kind of traditional pony club show jumping, and all of our horses had shoes on because that was what you did. And I think we were like 8 weeks probably in
Yeah.
between getting them reshod. And it wasn't until I went to America actually, and I was riding at a dressage barn, and the lady had quite a few of her horses barefoot, and I was
Yeah.
kind of like, what? Seem right. And she said to me that she had transitioned a lot of her horses, and
Yeah.
she was a Grand Prix dressage rider. She had transferred her horses to being barefoot after her instructor, I don't know who it was, but it was in Europe. They had a horse that just wasn't going right, and I think as a last resort,
Yeah.
they ended up going barefoot. And this horse went from not being able to perform to then having the shoes off and getting much
Yeah.
higher scores in its test, just from
That's
that
that
change.
just makes me sing. I love to hear those sorts of stories. I really do. Yeah.
Yeah, really neat.
Beautiful. Pardon?
Especially at a high level.
Well,
Especially at a
exactly.
high level as well.
The transition is long though. Some horses transition really quickly, but it isn't a 5-minute job. It's not just a case of whacking off the shoes and then doing nothing. It needs to be a good balanced trim, good foot care, good husbandry, lots of movement, build up those internal structures. Buy boots if you need to. And your horse will love you for it, really will.
That's neat. We've got Rachel on here who says that she's always shod every 5 to 6 weeks
Great.
and
That's
never
really
gone
good
any
to hear.
longer.
I'd heard that sometimes they need to be longer because of the nails. I don't know about that, but because the nails have to be, you need to have enough hoof wall in order to put the next set of nails in. So if the hoof wall hasn't grown quickly enough, when you put your next new nails in, it's too close to the old nail holes, and that's when you get a lot of damage of the wall. You know, look, I don't really understand the shoeing side, and I don't know if that's true, but that's what I read. So that's what makes it more difficult with having a shorter shoeing cycle. But I went out with a farrier, and he said to me that really 6 weeks, seven at an absolute push is the gold standard.
Right, yeah. What do you think of those glue-on plastic type of shoes? I remember seeing a friend who was a rainer
Yeah.
using them at one point. I'm not too
Yeah.
sure if he carried on using them or not, but he showed them to me. And I guess the idea behind them was to be able to give more
Look,
flex in
anything
the
that
hoof.
allows the hoof to flex is good in my mind. Because you see, the hoof is designed to flex. And the whole idea, the hoof flexes, the hoof wall flexes, and everything else flexes inside. So if you've got something solid on the bottom, you don't get that flex in. And this is why we get so many difficulties and issues with joints and with ligaments and tendons and tears, because all that energy, it tears a ligament because the hoof can't flex. So yes, I would have thought those shoes would have been a really good compromise. My only reservation, and look, I don't know a lot about them, is the gluing. I don't know how that would affect if they needed to rasp the foot back to get the glue on, or and then when they put the next shoe on, do they need to keep rasping it off to get the old glue off? That would be my only concern, really, because a lot of rasping goes on the hoof wall when shoes are put on. And the reason for that, and farriers have told me, it's because owners want the feet to look really pretty and clean. And by doing that, they're taking away this very important waterproofing layer. And also, just one swipe of the rasp across a hoof wall takes away millimeters of very important hoof wall. You know, we can't be taking any of it away. We need it desperately. So I'm not sure about the gluing of those shoes, what sort of effect that
Interesting.
has, and whether they need to rasp the walls
Yeah.
back for it.
Would be quite interesting to do a study. Maybe that would be a hoof that you could find one day, Lindsay, one that has had those type of shoes on.
I would love to. I've got a few hooves in my freezer that have been shod all their lives. I can't wait to look inside those. Maybe I might have to blink and eat humble pie, and they might be beautiful inside. But you know, if they are, I would be pretty
You
truthful, you know,
never know.
because I don't want to be biased, and I try and be totally unbiased when I do my dissections. I say what I see, and I say what I read in the literature, and I try and let people make their own minds up. And really, 99% of the feet that I'm dissecting at the moment are barefoot. Now, some of them might have had shoes on historically, but most of them are barefoot. But like I say, I've got a few that have had shoes on for many, many years, so they're ones I can't wait to start looking at.
Oh,
Yes.
that's exciting to have a look at. I'm just going to check our time because I know it's starting to get late and I want to make sure that we don't go too far over time. I'll just have a look. Okay, so we've been going for
Yes.
an hour quarter. And it's
Okay.
starting to get close to my bedtime,
Yes.
or at least the time I should go to bed. okay, so that's taking too long to load. So last time we talked, I said to you about, well, I asked you what your top tip was, and you said just do
Yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And to take a rest
Yes.
and have a play. So maybe could we go
Yes,
into
I definitely
that a
would.
little
Honestly, I would say to your viewers, just do it. Honestly, you cannot, I truly believe you cannot do terrible, terrible things unless you got a knife and you started carving away. But buy yourself a nice quality rasp. It's going to cost you a reasonable amount of money, $50, say. It'll last you for ages. Keep it in the house if you can, because being outside in your shed blunts it really quickly. That gets rusty. So keep it, or you could wrap it in an oily rag. That keeps it nice. Now, get that rasp and just imagine you are filing your own nails. You're just going around the outside. That's all I would say to you to do. Just go around the outside and round everything off. So, and then if you did that once a week, you would make such a difference to your horse's foot. Because what happens is that nature would be wearing that hoof wool, and when the hoof wool wears down, then the horse's body, the cells go, oh, quick, we're wearing it down. We need to make some more hoof wool because we're wearing it out. So what you're doing is you're recreating what nature does by taking off just one rasp all the way round. When your trimmer comes, they're going to go, oh my gosh, look at these. Aren't they beautiful?
And the because there's two sides to the
Yeah, so
rasp.
you've got
What
the
side?
side which is very coarse. That's going to take quite a lot off. So I would encourage you to use the side that's the least amount, because you're going to be really scared to put that rasp on that hoof, because you're going to be terrified you're going to do something wrong, you're going to lame your horse, you're going to take it out of balance. But honestly, if you just go all the way round, just like you were doing your nail with that, with the side that's not so coarse, you really, really can't do anything wrong. And you'll learn so much. And ask your trimmers, ask them, what can you do to keep those feet in lovely condition in between trims? And get them to show you. And I'm sure they'd be happy to do that, because you're actually saving a lot of work for them. It means that when they come, all they've got to do is a quick touch up, a quick balancing. And honestly, balancing is not rocket science. And also, by doing that, it means you're studying the foot. Take pictures as well. Get your iPhone or whatever. Take pictures, front pictures, sole pictures, side pictures. And when you sit down at night after you've had your dinner, look at those photographs and try and read the foot. Try and read, what are the tubules doing? Are they straight? Are they running straight down from the coronary band, straight down to the floor? Are they wibbly wobbly? Can I see ripples in the hoof wall? Those are the sorts of questions you need to ask yourself. And then if you can get onto a good Facebook page, and people will help you, send pictures into them and say, what do you think of these feet? And they'll tell you. And the trouble is, you ask 100 equestrians a question and you'll get 100 different answers. So you have to wade through all of your answers, and you have to pick out, you have to see what answers keep coming back. And after a while, you start to understand, and the penny will drop. But you've got to keep looking at these photographs, and keep taking photographs and seeing the
Awesome.
improvements.
Yeah, because I guess a
Yes,
pattern will
you'll see
start to
it,
form.
honestly. But you only see it by looking, and you only look and you look and you look at first and you don't know what the hell you're looking at. But if I showed you a picture and I showed you distorted tubules and I said to you, look, can you see that those toe quarters, so you know you've got the front, which is the very front of the foot. If you can imagine those quarters at the side, at the front, they're called the toe quarters. Sometimes they get really long and the foot looks quite boxy. Well, if you look at a foot that looks like that, you'll see in the hairline, you'll see like a slight lifty up at those two pillars. That's your sign. And people will look at it and not even see it. But if you look at it and you study it, you'll understand, ah, those pillars have got far too long. I need to get my rasp out and I need to round it all off. And you know what? You round it off and within a few hours, that hairline on that coronary band goes straight again. It's unbelievable.
Wow. That's amazing, because it can relax exactly. And there's no pressure on it.
It's like a straw. If you can imagine, they can all work individually on their own almost. They can be pushed up by the ground because the wall's got too long, and they can be let down when that ball is taken back a little bit. And that's your key. You need to get all the tubules all lined up in a row.
Wow, that is so cool. How exciting. I can't wait to go and look at these now. Yeah, well, and I think I'm in a little bit of a lucky position, because I have, I won't say how many, but I have quite a few horses at our property. Yeah, so that will be great to be able to look and probably compare as well.
And honestly, by looking, that's the only way you can learn, mm-hmm. and to learn from other people.
Yes, yeah. Is there a Facebook group that you recommend?
Oh, gosh. The trouble is I keep a low profile now, because I've got such a high profile of my own. I can't be seen to be favouring any one group. But there are a lot of groups out there. I would just look up natural hoof or natural hoof trimming or anything like that, and you'll see lots of groups. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes you might have to actually ask to join. Pete Rainey's got a group called Hoof Rehab. Mm-hmm. I think that's what that's called. And that's a very good group. Again, the problem is you get sometimes information overload. But after a while, if you keep being drip-fed the same information, it starts to go in. And honestly, the people I learned from in my early days were Facebook. People would send their photographs of their horse's hooves to a trim group, and they would ask for help. And then people would give all the advice as to what needed to be done, and they'd write, you know, they'd do markups on the hooves, and then explain what was wrong and what needed to be done. And after a while, you start to see a pattern, and you can learn from it, you see. So yes, just go onto Facebook and look up barefoot trimming. That's the best thing.
Yeah, fantastic. We've just got a comment from Rachel, who says, I would love to go barefoot with the horse I have now due to the cost of shoeing, but due to workload and his flat front feet, I am unable to. I did have my last horse barefoot for 3 to 4 years of her life, and her feet were better than when they were shod. With shoes on, I always had trouble with hoof breaking away. Once she was barefoot, they all stopped, and they were strong.
Yeah.
They were stronger than with the shoes on.
Yeah, unfortunately, Rachel, you are in a very difficult position. The transition for your horse and being very flat-footed. Now, some trimmers would say they can transition any hoof. The flattest foot, they could transition. Me, personally, I'm not so sure. It would take a very long time, and really you'd probably have to go with boots, and I don't think that boots are allowed for some of the disciplines, and I think that's where the problem is. And if you need your horse to be doing these things, I think you're in a really difficult position.
That's not, but I guess she's doing the best she can do and all the things with the shoes on, so that's fantastic. So to round off, this is our finishing up question. What does working from the inside out mean to
Oh,
you?
well, straight away, I think that what's inside the foot is critical. The outside of the foot can look beautiful. It can look picture perfect. But if the inside isn't right, that foot is not going to function. And the inside, meaning the digital cushion, the lateral cartilages, the blood supply, the frog, the inside of the frog, they are the critical things. They need to be functioning, healthy, strong in order for the foot to do its job. So the inside of the foot to me is the most important, and that's the bit we don't see. We just don't get to see it. But if you watch my videos, you'll see lots of insides of feet, and after a while, the penny will start to drop about what I'm talking about. All these words, digital cushions, lateral cartilages, blood supplies, it'll all start to come into place. The inside of the foot, critical, inside out.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So if people want to learn more and follow what you do, where can
Well, my
they go
Facebook page is
to,
called The
Lindsay?
Study of the Equine Hoof. And on there, I put all of my mini videos and all of my blogs and photographs and lots of educational material. And what's great about it is that I have now, gosh, 24, over 24,000 people follow me. And out of those people, we have farriers, we have barefoot trimmers, we have vets, we have body workers, we have anatomists, you name it, they all contribute. And it is a really good, safe environment for you to watch and to learn and to ask questions, because I won't tolerate any bad behavior or people being unkind to each other. Anybody that's like that, they get banned. There's no second chance. So it means that you can ask the daftest question you like, and you'll get some answers. And I answer every question that comes up on there. Now, you can also message me and I'll talk to you. You can send me pictures of your horse's hooves and I'll give you some of my advice on what I think I'm seeing. But remember, I'm not a vet, I'm not a trimmer. I just dissect hooves, and I've dissected hundreds now. So I'm starting to see a pattern appear. And I'd love you to join me on my Facebook page. And if you want to support my work, I've got a Patreon page where people can support me for $5 a month. That's US dollars. And they get to see all my full-length videos. And what they get is they're helping me to educate other people. And they get to see these really longer videos. They might be 10, 15, 20 minutes. And I go into more detail about things. But I also put videos on there that I don't put anywhere else. And I also put photographs on there of some really cool macro photography, where I get my microscope and I'll take photographs through my microscope, or I've got a macro lens and I take some really cool photographs of close-ups inside the foot, and they're all on my Patreon page.
Awesome. That sounds great. I'm going to have to check that out. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight, Lindsay. And I'm sure that there will be lots of people that will be interested to, if they haven't already, to go and check out your page and do lots of learning, because I know I have had so many aha moments. Even redoing this for a second time, I'm still like, wow. it's fantastic. Thank you so much for everything you do, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again at some stage
That's
to go
lovely. Thank
deeper
you. It's
into
been a
things
pleasure to
again.
talk to you. Thank you so much. Okay, bye.
No worries. Talk soon.
This podcast was proudly brought to you by Finesse Equestrian Training. You can find out more at finesseequestrian.com or the Facebook page. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends so that everyone can benefit.